On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, it is a weekend recap bonanza. The Mets break out the buckets of water and they mop the Cardinals into oblivion. We'll talk about that. We'll chat about the tweet heard around the baseball world. Ronald Acuna Jr., if it was me, they would have taken me out of the game. The reasons to worry over in Atlanta. And then we fly through the rest of all the action from the weekend that was and apologize to the Baltimore Orioles for their mentions after a 24-2 defeat. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world passionate about the fact that Mr. and Mrs. Met should do a renewal of vows. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And as far as I can tell, there was never an official wedding between the Mets.
Interesting. Well, if this season continues on as planned, which has most recently featured a mop of the St. Louis Cardinals, anything will be possible at Citi Field. You thought the vibes were good last year. Well, oh boy, these Metropolitans are off to quite the start in 2025. On this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast, we talk about those mopping Mets who took all four from the Cardinals, a couple other sweeps to talk about, the Braves and the Guardians winning all their games over the weekend. We'll highlight a handful of other series, open the the unfortunate mentions of the Baltimore Orioles, and then turbo mode through the rest of the series. Jake, good morning. How are you doing before we talk about the Mets?
I'm doing sensationally. And I've never heard of the Baltimore Orioles, and I can't wait to be told about them. Enough. 24-2. What even is that?
Let's talk about a good baseball team. Thanks. The New York Mets, Jake. Oh, my goodness. When opportunity knocks and the Mets answer, they say, come on in. It's time to win all four baseball games over a weekend. And the Mets welcomed the St. Louis Cardinals, a team that we actually don't think is that bad, despite their strange offseason and strange declarations about their plans for this season. Cardinals went into Citi, and they went 0-4. The Mets pitching continues to astound as they win all four. Jake, I know you attended, I believe, the first game of the series and were around some of these teams a couple of those other days. So I'll let you take the lead here. Yeah. What is going well in Queens? I understand there are a lot of people at the baseball games, which is maybe an important place to start, because one of the low-key weird storylines of their season last year is that their attendance actually was not as good as you would expect for a team that kind of had this magical run. Obviously, towards the end of the season, it was picking up. But one of the things coming into the season with Steve Cohen was like, come on, like we're the Mets. Like we're spending so much money and we should be good. Like we should be packing this place. And it sure seems like that was the case this weekend.
Yeah. Well, it was weekend games, obviously, do better than weeknight games. And that there were tons of people at the yard over the weekend was not surprising or compelling to me. Whereas the Thursday night game that they played, I don't know what the exact number is. I'll pull it up now that I'm talking about it. That felt pretty packed, considering it was a Thursday night game with pretty cold weather. Like, here we go. 38-246. Like, that's legit. That's legit. And kudos to Mets and Mets fans for making that happen. And it's just a great reminder of how attendance works in the early season, right? It's on a tape delay. And heading into 2024, the Mets did not conjure a lot of buzz in the fan base because they had a very unexciting offseason. That coming off an underwhelming year. And so there wasn't this sense of genuine excitement within the fan base. And remember, for all of April, they were bad. They weren't playing well. It was not an interesting, exhilarating team. And understandably, people didn't show up. It turns out that if you make a run to the NLCS and you sign Juan Soto, they will come.
Yes, and just to kind of wrap this note on attendance, just to back up some of the numbers here, Baseball Reference has some great just attendance numbers if you go to their miscellaneous page for each season. And the Mets last year, compared to 2023, had on average 3,000 fewer, you know, paid attendance for that per season game. Compared to 2023,
right?
per game, right? 3,000 per game on average, which was only the White Sox, Blue Jays, and Cardinals were lower in terms of decline compared to the season before. Now, if you look at the early season this year and you go per game, they're 14,000 above per game where they were at this time last year. So again, that's speaking to what you're saying, which is what they were thinking at the very beginning of last season, which is why I love this tool so much, is that it's based on the date, not just the whole season. But they are just crushing. And you can see, like, all the it's not just, okay, it's bobblehead night, now everyone's showing up. Like, people are packing the place. I know it's only, you know, 10 games so far. So anyway, I just wanted to leave with that. But obviously the team is also giving them a reason to show up.
Just got a text from my Aunt Jennifer. I'll be at City Field tonight. You? ?
There you go. There's one more person that probably wasn't there a year ago.
Hey.
I'm not doubting Jen's fandom, but you know, it's timely.
And the Mets gave all those human beings joy over the weekend, winning all four games against the Cardinals for the first Mets mop over the St. Louis Cardinals since April of 1986. And in Mets land, if there's ever a first since 1986, you just feel the irrational confidence bubbling up within the fan base, baby.
Wow. Okay, so that already is an amazing thing, because they're certainly not playing four-game series against the Cardinals every year, but they are playing them decent. They have played many of them, and so this is the first time. That tells me something. Mm-hmm. That's a great fun fact that I did not know. Okay, so how do these games go? I know generally the Mets win by not allowing the other team to score a lot of runs. That's my understanding as to their strategy for victory.
Yeah, it's been working pretty well, and before this weekend, it was really like the Pete Alonso show on the offensive side. A couple of other players started getting hot over this past weekend, which is very notable. Juan Soto had a good weekend, 2 home runs from Mark Vientos. Francisco Lindor hit just a badass walk-off home run on Friday night and then went yard to start the game the following day. And he was 7 for 18. There was some wild stat that, like, if he gets on base to start the game, the Mets have lost once. You know,
yeah.
One of those great.
I mean, again, when you're what are you, 15-7? You know, you can. There's a lot of ways to slice and dice this hot start to the season. I mean, to your point, it did feel like Pete had been the story so far, and that hasn't exactly slowed down. I think Pete saying the quote I saw, I don't even know if it was after the Friday or Saturday game, where he said he hasn't felt this locked in. He said, someone said, oh, when's the last time you felt this locked in? And he said, I don't know, junior year of college, which, again, this is someone who coming into the season had, you know, over 220 career major league home runs. But I do think it speaks to, like, the version of Pete Alonso that we're seeing. Like, this is not just a hulking slugger who can hit the ball over the fence. He's got more walks and strikeouts. He's hitting .346. Like, this is a complete hitter. This is not just someone who is on a power surge. It is a just an all-around. That's what that locked in thing is, not just like, all right, when he hits it, it goes over the fence. He's just hitting everything.
You know what's hilarious, though? His OPS right now is higher than it was in that junior year of college with the University of Florida when he posted 1128 OPS, 14 home runs in 58 games. He currently is at 1171. So if he can sustain this, he might get picked pretty high next year.
Yeah, and it is important context for those who we're not following college baseball at that point. I mean, Pete was obviously one of the best hitters in college baseball, but the baseball, like the offensive environment wasn't anywhere close to what it was.
Dead baller.
Like if that Pete Alonso existed in today, I mean, the OPS would be 1500 easily because way more balls would be going over the fence. But to his point, he was hitting in college. He hit 374 with, you know, the same number of walks and strikeouts. Like, and I think that's really what he's getting at, because not that Pete has struck out that much in his major league career. It's been, you know, his rookie year, it was pretty elevated, but this kind of plate discipline and just general on base is just not something we've seen from him at a consistent level.
Pete Alonso is making himself money that he has earned the entire time. We are Pete Alonso defenders 1A and 1B, and we always shall be. And it's been great to see him start the year like this, because look, he will not hit this well all year. There will be slumps. But to start this way, it just avoids all the questions, right? It just makes it the impending free agency and his free agency last year and the opt out. It just makes none of that a story where there's like, oh, will he opt out? Will he not? Like, yes, he's going to be a free agent. The freaking duh. And so I think that is really reassuring. Two other Mets I want to talk about. Kodai Senga. Kodai Senga was kind of the key player for us for this team heading into the season, because he felt like the pitcher who you could envision getting a Cy Young vote on this team with a healthy year, right? All of the doubts about the Mets rotation heading into this season have, in the early going, been answered. Griffin Canning has looked great. David Peterson has looked very, very good. Clay Holmes is making a good transition to the rotation. Even, you know, Tyler McGill with a 1-4 in 19 innings. But even now, as you project ahead, right? And you're like, who do I feel good about in game one of a playoff series?
Exactly.
It's exactly. Still Senga, just because his stuff is so good and different and unique and impactful. And for him to come out and deliver another banger of a start over the weekend, now his ERA is 0.79 across four starts. That's huge. That's enormous. And look, is he going to stay healthy? It's April 21st. Maybe, maybe not. But you can envision a world where it's Kodai Senga, game one, NLDS, Citi Field, and everybody in the audience feels good about it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, I think that the durability question remains the biggest thing with him, because I mean, yeah, when he's been healthy, he's been good. He clearly, when he came back at the end of last season, we were not getting a version of him that was representative of his talent level. What was representative was his rookie year, where he, you know, almost was rookie of the year and you know, got Cy Young votes and everything. So it doesn't necessarily shock me that he's having this success, but it is very refreshing to see a nice reminder to just see, have him take the ball, you know, every his time through the rotation. And I hope he can build that workload. I hope he can stay on there, because he's also just ridiculously fun to watch. But I do think that, yeah, that's you mentioned all these other guys, but those are, in some ways, those are a bigger part of this Mets story so far, is how good Griffin Canning has been, how good Clay Holmes has been, how good Tyler McGill has been, right? Because that's really why they have the lowest ERA in baseball by a lot, by like almost half a run over, I think, the Padres, who are second. They've only allowed 9 home runs the whole season, which is really amazing. Clay Holmes has faced the most batters this year without allowing a home run. And that is just a remarkable strategy for you know, run prevention success. That, I don't know, is it specifically, have they tailored their guys? Is that something about their pitch mix? Is that something about just the opponents that they've made? We're still dealing with a kind of small sample, but when you consider how far ahead they are in some of these pitching metrics, it's pretty astonishing. Yeah. And so that is what has been really impressive to me. And as we wait for Montas and Minaya, I think that's what's also compelling, is like, okay, we were obviously skeptical of the Montas signing, but we also said, okay, trust in the Mets. He immediately gets hurt, and we're like, okay, well, this is part of the risk with Montas. So, like, how did you not see this coming? At the same time, also part of me, like, excited for Montas to get back to find out what they're going to do with him, because we're seeing what they're doing with all these other guys, you know, and it makes me have more confidence that he is going to have success if and when, you know, he comes back and is able to be a big part of this rotation moving forward. So, again, it's still not great that those guys are out. Like, that's not, I don't want to spin that as that good of a thing.
Sure.
But if, as we look forward and say, like, okay, how good is this Mets team? part of it too is, all right, I don't know if the pitching is going to be. Oh, yeah.
I just want to interject on the home run thing. So the Mets have played, they've played 22 games, right?
Yep.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of those games have been against the Marlins offense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Not very good. Not a good offense.
Yep.
The Twins.
Twins. Yeah.
Not hitting.
I mean, they lost that series to the Twins.
I understand. But yes. Inexplicable.
Yeah.
And the Cardinals, who don't hit a lot of homers. So, like, you can envision how you got there, right?
Sure.
Just looking at that list. Sure. And the Blue Jays, who are second to last in homers, they started at home against Toronto. And so they've been playing teams that are low in the list. I also do think that there is something about, particularly with Holmes and Senga, everything's going down. All their pitches are going, like, the splitter is dropping for Senga, the ghost fork, whatever you want to call it. Holmes is sinker, baby, down, heavy ball, bowling ball. It's tough to lift that. And so I do think that that plays a significant role.
Yeah. And the last thing, just kind of bigger picture about how good this team is, we look forward to Manaea Montas coming back, and presumably that will help. And we'll see if there's guys that are going to come up, whether it's a Sproat or Blake Tidwell or other guys that could help if someone else goes down. I mean, to me, this level of pitching is unsustainable, but I also think that there's a lot of upside with the offense. And I think that's kind of where you have to hope that it balances out and becomes a team that can compete for the division. Yeah. Is, all right, fine. Maybe their ERA won't be 2-2 for the whole season, but I also don't think they're going to be 20th in OPS for the whole season either. And so that's where I think you have to be mostly encouraged. I am curious if you where you're at on the offense, because we talk about Pete and he's been the star. Lindor's been good. He certainly has had some moments, but it certainly hasn't been on the whole as productive as he was a year ago, obviously. And Soto, because of the context, is essentially going to be held to the highest possible standard, sure, to where when he goes 0-for-8, everyone's freaking out. And then general, I'm sure he's still, what, I don't know. I don't know what his numbers are right now, but I'm sure his,
couple things.
Yeah.
Here's where I'm at on Mets big picture. And then I'll zoom in on Soto. Big picture, the talent on the offensive side of the ball is so bankable that they're going to hit. Lindor is going to get hotter than where he is now. So is Soto. Starling Marte, I think there's a little bit more left there. I just believe, I'm low on Vientos, but he's not this bad. Nimmo is not this bad. I think there are reasons to look at the group and think that it's worse than you might expect it to be after the top three, right, of Lindor, Alonso, Soto. There is a steep drop-off. And it makes you think, like, duh, they were always going to bring Pete back.
Yes.
But I believe in this operation enough. I had someone tell me this weekend, like, the Mets pitching development at the big league level is the best in the game and is the real deal. And what they've done, like,
yeah,
it's not smoke and mirrors. This is a legitimate core competency that provides value and is why they've chosen to kind of spend and allocate their money the way that they have. And I think it was legitimate for all of us on this side to kind of doubt that after 1 year. And I understand it's only been 1 month, but just, I believe in it. I just absolutely believe it's real.
Yeah. Well, and quickly before we go back to Soto, like, we mentioned all those starters, Peterson, McGill, you know, Canning, the bullpen, honestly, besides Diaz, like, Diaz has been by far the shakiest, which is, you can look at that as a concern, and you can look at that as a positive, because he could also just rattle off 20 straight scoreless innings. But I mean, they're third in bullpen ERA, you know, second in WHIP, like, and that's a group that is, right? There's some returners like Stanek, you know, our guy Ryan Stanek, you know, Buto's still back there. But, you know, Max Kranich and Oscar Brazoban and, you know, Reed Garrett, like, these guys are all getting a ton of outs. And that's part of the infrastructure, too, that you also have to respect.
So Juan Soto, there was a lot of, oh, Juan Soto washed, Juan Soto struggling. There was a moment, I think, over the weekend, he got like a standing ovation. Mets fans getting behind him, lifting him up.
I'm not going down that road again.
No more standing ovations.
This discourse again.
Look, all this conversation. Do you know what his OPS plus is right now? Do you know what it is right now?
I don't. I would guess it's like 145 would be my
guess. 137. Okay. Yeah. It's 137. I
mean, that is pretty bad for Juan Soto.
But this is why Juan Soto is different. Okay? The bottom, the struggle, the strife, the worry is about a guy with a who is 37% better than the average hitter. Right. And so like it's like even like he's so good, dude.
No, I know, and but it's also relevant when we're talking about these tiny April samples, because it's like there you could pick your favorite actual superstars all over the place have 60 OPS pluses through the first. They're like actively crap, you know. Doesn't happen with him. It doesn't exist. He's on base too often, and that's why, you know, highest floor in baseball. So, like, yeah.
Aaron Judge, no, I'm last year,
mm-hmm. last at April, this time, was a bad hitter.
People forget. Like, this has just kind of been lost to history because of what Aaron Judge accomplished. But here, I have him right in front of me. Through 22 like games May last year.
5th, or maybe, yeah. I guess he was by the end of April. He was
perfect. Through 22 games last season, right, which is exactly where the Mets are. He had a 674 OPS. He had a 183 batting average. He had hit only 2 home runs. It's a long season.
So yeah, Juan Soto, he'll be fine. He'll be just fine. And I wouldn't be too concerned about him.
Just quickly, and we'll take a break. Mets Phillies this week. It's got some real juice to it now. You know? Oh, yeah. I think with the Braves sweep, these are the two best teams in the division. The Phillies are kind of like, I would describe it to the way that Jordan did middle school, where they're not trying really.
No.
And it's not crisp. And yet you're rolling into the exam and you're getting a B plus, you know?
That's true. I did that. That does sum up my age 9 to 14 educational experience.
Yeah, and that's what the Phillies are right now.
That's why I picked them to win the World Series.
You saw yourself in them. I'm just excited to see these two teams play. Series starts tonight in Queens. Yeah. 3-game set.
We'll see. Anything else? This Mets, I you know, the NL East race is interesting. We will learn some more about this. We'll talk about the Braves here in a second. The Mets offense beyond those big three is going to be interesting, right? We'll get McNeil back. Francisco Alvarez will come back. I am still a little concerned that part of the lineup is going to end up holding them back to some degree, but they, you know, I don't want to kill the vibes right now. They just mopped the Cardinals. Cardinals are fine. They're actually a decent team. They are exactly where I thought they would be. I think they're going to end up like, they're still going to trade a bunch of guys, I think, but they're not going to be that far out of it when they do it. That is my opinion on them. All right. Let's take a break, and when we return, we'll talk about the two other sweeps before highlighting some other series. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. When you beat a team 3 times in a row, that's called a sweep. How sweep it is. We had 2 over the weekend, and we will begin with the Braves over the Twins, because everyone cares about what happened on the field in Atlanta this weekend. Just kidding. Let's get into the spice.
So let's give credit to the Bravos for, I mean, this was a series between 2 teams that were super down bad to start the year. The Twins continued to plummet. The Braves' record is still quite poor, but they needed to win this series. And they did. They took all 3 games. They proved that they have more talent. They had some big moments. They had a big comeback on Friday night. You're feeling good there. Chris Sale was like slightly better. He still kind of talked about how he thought he sucked, but you know, they still managed to get a win. And if you're the Braves, you're just trying to feel slightly better about this miserable start to the season. However,
the going through
that is not what most people were talking about. Yeah, this was the going through a poll. But this was not. You would think, okay, Braves back on track, Twins season is over. No, let's talk about Jared Kelnick and Ronald Acuna Jr.
Some tweets.
2 players who have generally not made an impact this year, shall we say. as Jared Kelnick... Oh, my guy. I mean, it bums me out because I really thought that he was going to be something, as many people did. I wasn't alone. Anyway, Jared Kelnick, of course, hitting 180 this season with two home runs. He thought he had a third home run.
He didn't.
Over the Spoilers. Weekend. When he launched a ball to right field. And Jared Kelnick, as we should note, uncharacteristically, kind of gives a little bit of a look. Jared Kelnick's like, oh, I got one. I got one. Oh, never mind. I got to run. I got to bust it to second base. Ooh, I get thrown out. Ooh, yikes.
Got a blast.
This happens to players a bunch of times a year. But Jared Kelnick is like, oh, this guy. I mean, come on. Jared Kelnick always hustles. True. It is true. That is not something you would accuse Jared Kelnick of ever doing. Yeah. He hustles too much. True. Anyway, everyone's like, wow, that's a bad look for Jared Kelnick, who's, you know, hitting 180. This feels familiar. Wouldn't, like, can you imagine if Ronald Acuna Jr. had done that? Well, guess what? Ronald Acuna Jr. apparently also had the same thought as he, I guess, was tweeting from home. I don't think he was. Actually, I don't even know. Was he in the? No, he there's no way he's actually there. I was thinking, like, was he in the dugout when this happened? There's no way. I know that's not when he tweeted this. But anyway, Ronald Acuna Jr., who's still working his way back, rehabbing his ACL. Tweeted at, I believe it was at Mark Bowman, the Braves beat writer, who tweeted out the kind of non-explanation from Brian Snitker, the manager, who was like, yeah, I don't know, like, I didn't see it. What was I supposed to get mad at him for? And Ronald Acuna Jr. tweeted, if it were me, they would have taken me out of the game, which is a funny thing to say when this has actually happened. There's no if. This is a win situation. It's not an
if. He should have tweeted, it was me, and they took me out of the game. This is an article from the same Mark Bowman from August 18th, 2019, with the headline, Acuna respects Snitker's decision to pull him. So at the time, Acuna, you know, played ball. It was the exact same thing. Acuna doinked one off the wall that he thought was a homer. He was not thrown out at second like Jared Kelnick. It was merely a long single. Okay. So in fact, it was better than what Kelnick did. And this is the Snitker quote from 2019. Quote, he didn't run. You've got to run. It's not going to be acceptable here. As a teammate, you're responsible for 24 other guys. That's how you know it was a long time ago. Not 25 other guys. And that name on the front is a lot more important than the name on the back of that jersey. Hashtag Herb Brooks. Who do you play for? You can't do that. We're trying to accomplish something special here. Personal things have to be put on the back burner. He was pulled from that game. Now, how did Snitker, after being asked about this, how did he play it, right? And I did not love the way he played it. Snitker basically opted or claimed to go, I did not see nothing. He was like, what do you mean Jared Kelnick didn't hustle? It's Jared Kelnick. He always hustles. Quote, I don't look for him to not hustle because he plays with his hair on fire all of the time. And he's laying out. I didn't know it until I saw it this morning. Now, if that's true, that's still bad. Because he saw when Acuna did it, right? He saw when Acuna did it. And if you are not noticing these things as a manager, then they are not actually important to you, right? Mm-hmm. That's the thing. That's what frustrates me. Obviously, there's the double standard, which is founded in, like, Ronald is a Latin guy who is cool, and Jared Kelnick is like your scrappy white guy out there doing his best. Like, that is definitely a part of this. I actually think that, like, Snitker, it just shows, like, this lack of what actually matters. And maybe that's changed, right? Maybe Snitker at age 70 in 2025 with a ring already under his belt is just paying less attention than he was in 2019. And I'm willing to believe that. Whatever it is, though, whatever mechanisms led to this double standard is bad, right? The outcome is so uneven, as Ronald Acuna Jr. correctly points out, that the outcome is bad. Now, here's the thing. Is Ronald right ideologically? Yes. Shouldn't have tweeted it. Shouldn't have tweeted it. Shouldn't have tweeted it. And that's the thing, right? Is like, Ronald is, no one looks good here. No one looks good here. Kelnick looks bad. Snicker looks bad. And I actually do think Acuna looks a little bit bad. He looks the least bad, but he still looks bad. And that's just because this is a legitimate gripe that he has. Very legitimate. For the face of the franchise to be watching the game and see that a player who stinks right now is being treated better than he was, right? That's a legit gripe. Send it in an email, right? Talk about it in person.
Schedule a meeting.
Do it on Zoom. Keep it out of the public eye. I am happy that Ronald did this in public because it's hilarious and we can joke and talk about it on the podcast.
Sure.
But it's not the way you go about it, right? It's,
yeah.
Again, not the biggest crime here, not even close. But I don't think I think multiple things could be true. Ronald is right in what he believes, and he is wrong in how he chose to exhibit that.
Yeah, and I do think that just like what it says about how the specific Dolce, like, yeah, 2019 was a long time ago. And Snicker asked about it too. He was like, oh, every situation is different. It's a timing thing. Like, okay, sure. But to your point, none of this is a good outcome for anybody. And I guess it's just another thing the Braves have to, it was just going to boil over. I don't know. It doesn't really matter that much, I don't think. I'm sure Brian Snicker would love to have Ronald Acuna back pimping as many long singles as he can, because right now the Braves need all the help they could get. And so, you know, I don't think he's going to be picky at this point, but I think it does speak to that. Yes,
I think it matters more than you think.
Okay, but in like, what way? Like, how does that manifest? I mean, I don't, like, Jared Kelnick is probably, he's only still playing because the Braves outfield situation is as dire as it is. I don't know. Is it going to impact his relationship with Acuna? Yeah, if I'm Kelnick, I'm probably not feeling awesome that Acuna is saying that about. But he's not. That commentary is not necessarily about Kelnick as much as it is about Snicker. So
it's about Snicker. It's not about. Yeah. It's not about Acuna and Kelnick. Yeah. To me, it just says something very simple. And there's a breakdown at some point in the chain here, right? Where the act that Kelnick did on the field, where you. Look, we let the kids play, like pimp a home run. Sure.
Yeah, if you got thrown out, you look like a doofus.
You look like
that's
an
fine.
Idiot.
Like, we're not,
you look like a doofus, well,
that's
okay. Right?
That's part of it, you know? Sure.
I have no issue with pulling a guy for doing this. Acuna, too. Like, if you pimp a homer and it goes out, don't pull the guy. That's whatever. Like, that's cool. That's if you pimp one and it hits off the top of the wall and you get a single, you're a dummy and you need facing consequences for your actions. Like, that's living in the planet, right? Mm-hmm. Something along the chain of command here broke down. Whether that, like, somebody in the Braves dugout saw that Kelnick watched it.
Yes.
And that information never made its way to Snicker, or that information made its way to Snicker and he opted not to act on it. Someone failed here. And I think that just shows me that the Braves as an operation right now might not be humming on all cylinders in the way that it was 2 or 3 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but this is, when is the last time we saw a player publicly criticize a manager on the internet?
I don't know. Maybe I'm forgetting something obvious. But this,
like,
is
their relationship is built on enough that I'm sure they'll get past it and everything will be fine. Like, that's not.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, don't underplay this. This is weird.
I mean, of course. We spent 10 minutes talking about it. I understand. I mean, we could have just made a passing reference and moved on, and we didn't. So I get it. The Braves, I mean, clearly they're not having. They're 8-13. They're still in last place. They are now. They got the Cardinals coming to town, so that'll be a nice. All right. Well, let's see if the Cardinals just got mopped by the Mets. So if they go in and kick the Braves' butt, well, that kind of tells you the difference between those teams. Then they go on the road for Arizona and Colorado. They're just trying to claw their way back into it. Obviously, as they get healthier, that will probably, maybe, hopefully happen. Drake Baldwin is awesome, by the way.
Playoff team? Braves?
We will see. I mean, the thing I'm thinking about the Braves is, like, when I'm thinking about my NL postseason picks and how I ended up picking the D-backs barely over the Mets, that was a tough decision, but it was also predicated on, like, well, obviously the Braves at the top wildcard team, right? Like, that was obvious. So if that is now not the case anymore, then yeah, I do feel better about the Mets and the Diamondbacks than the Braves. But it is still too early to totally bury Atlanta. As for Minnesota, they have a homestand starting this week against the White Sox and the Angels. If they can't win some of those games, I don't know, man. They are. And speaking of attendance, let's just mention that Twins attendance is down at, like, record lows. And I would imagine that will continue this week, regardless of the outcomes. But that is a franchise that is not trending in the right direction. And we will keep an eye on that one. One more sweep to talk about. The Cleveland Guardians, who almost didn't. Emmanuel Clase was like, oh, hold on. I got to give up some more runs. And we got to make this game a little bit more harder to win than it needs to be. But the Guardians, they do take care of business against the Pirates. We already said we're not talking about the Pirates. We're not doing
it. Not allowed to talk about them.
I guess we're going to have to here for a second. Guardians sweep the Pirates in Pittsburgh. Yes, Clase allows more runs on Sunday, which forces them to go to extras. Clase has now allowed 9 earned runs this year. He allowed 5 all of last regular season. So that is a stat that is hard to fathom, but they do get the job done. Ben Lively inexplicably outdueling Paul Skeens on Saturday, which I think truly might be, from a stuff standpoint, the two ends of the spectrum. Yeah, you could throw in Kyle Hendricks or some of the other soft tossers, but Ben Lively, bless his heart, what he is a funny, funny dude. One of my favorite people to talk to in the Guardians clubhouse. He's just up there kind of gritting through it. And Paul Skeens is out there throwing 100. And Ben Lively goes 5 scoreless, because that's the state of the Pirates offense. And all the people that showed up for Paul Skeens bobblehead day, they get the bobblehead, but they get another Pirates loss.
Paul Skeens has the second hardest average fastball velocity amongst starters at 98, behind Hunter Green, who's averaging 99.3, which is preposterous. Yeah. On the other end of things, Ben Lively has the 6th slowest average fastball at 89.6. He is behind Marcus Stroman, Tyler Anderson, Martin Perez,
lefty,
Trevor Williams, and Kyle Hendricks.
Oh, boy. And Kyle Hendricks. Okay. So, yeah, among righties, he's right there at the bottom. Anyway, that really sums up the Pirates right there, is Ben Lively beating Paul Skeens. I mean, Skeens was still good. He gives up his first home run in 11 starts. Kyle Manzardo takes him to the river. And
Spud.
I mean, I just...
What did we agree to call Manzardo?
Did we settle on something?
It was like the rock basher. It was...
I see, I'm already forgetting.
It was such a good nickname.
Okay, we'll have to see. We clearly was so good that we remembered it. Anyway, Kyle Manzardo hits another home run on Sunday. Guardians looking pretty solid. But
Rockhound.
The Rockhound. Yes.
The Rockhound. The Rockhound Pirates Skeens deep is clearly what they said. Don't say anything about the Pirates. You are not allowed. Okay, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll fly through the rest of the action. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Those are all of our sweeps. Let's go around the league. Yankees taking 3 out of 4 over the Rays in their bizarre spring training homecoming, playing in their own spring training park as a visiting team. This really should have been a mop. Devin Williams with a tough outing on Saturday, the only blemish. Yanks being the road team at the Stein, at the George. I saw someone calling it the Boss as the name of the stadium, which I'm against. I prefer hashtag Phil the Stein. It was less weird than I thought on TV. And that's just, look, we've seen the Yankees in this stadium a lot. It was that simple for me. it was weirder to see the Rockies there. It was weirder to see the Angels there.
It's weirder to see the Cactus League teams playing in a Grapefruit League ballpark. What I wonder is how many of the Yankees had been in the visiting clubhouse. I don't actually, you actually know this better. I don't know how big of a difference or where the visiting clubhouse is there relative, but because the Rays have populated they now own the Yankees home spring training clubhouse there. So they don't get, Aaron Judge doesn't just get to go to his locker. So I don't know how big of a difference. That's what I'm more curious about is how many of them had even been to that other side.
Did you see Stanton left a bat in his locker for Jaime Candelario?
No.
Junior Caminero. Wow. Hilarious.
I was like, what?
That was so bizarre. My brain just was like, this guy's initials are JC.
JC.
He left a bat in his locker.
Oh, for Caminero.
Knowing that Caminero would use that locker. Oh, so he left one in there. And all I got to say is, you know, watch out, Junior, because maybe this is like a. In the old days, man, in the old days when I was growing up.
Yeah.
That would have like,
yeah,
you never do that. You know, maybe you put like, you know, rotten tuna in the bat.
Oh, yeah. Or you like put you're like trying to mess with your. Yeah. I thought they were rivals. What is this?
Yeah.
What is this fraternizing with the opponent? What
you
is
wipe
this? Disgusting?
Chicken pox all over the bat.
Yeah. But that's nice of him. That's good. I hope his bat doesn't mess up his elbows. it was a little weird to see some of it, but for the most part, it just looked like they're the Yankees. They're just batting in the top of the inning.
We had Jazz getting ejected and doing tweeting too. Same thing as this was funnier to me than the Acuna one because Jazz's target of the tweet was the umpire for whom a nice relationship is less relevant than if he was tweeting about Aaron Boone. We're trying to figure out why the suspension is still pending because he did it. We know he did it.
You're not allowed to tweet during a game.
You can't.
He tweeted, he gets ejected. He tweets not even effing close.
That's
5 minutes after he leaves the game.
That's one game.
And that's probably, you're probably going to get a one-game suspension. He managed to appeal it and played all weekend. I don't know if he's going to be playing this week in Cleveland, but anyway.
I would love to know the argument for the appeal.
Right.
Is he saying, I was out of the game. I'm a private citizen at this point. I can tweet anything I want.
Right. Or his argument was, Your Honor, it wasn't even effing close.
Effing close.
It wasn't. And they're like, oh, you're right.
Oh, you're right. It was a bad call. Sure. One other fun thing from this series was Max Fried dominating on Sunday. 7 2/3 shutout innings, carried a no-hitter into the eighth, into the seventh. We had this bizarre Chandler Simpson chopper to the right side that doinked off Paul Goldschmidt's glove that was ruled initially as an error, preserving the no-hitter for Max Fried. That was later changed to a hit right before Fried started the eighth inning.
Yeah.
So like when he stepped on the mound for warm-up pitches, it was a no-no. And then when he threw the first pitch of the inning, it was no. And then he let up a hit to the first batter of that inning, Jake Mangum. And so it was for sure a no.
Yeah. I'll be honest. This storyline does not compel me at all. If it was a perfect game, maybe I would have gotten more invested in whether this was a hit or an error.
Disagree.
Max Fried said after he didn't know or care. I don't think they would have let him finish the game anyway, but I could be wrong about that. I guess it was a good reason to watch Chandler Simpson run 100 times to watch this play over and over.
It was great.
But other than that, this was not the most interesting, strange umpire decision in this game, which was Aaron Judge hitting a home run and then being like, that was foul.
Max Fried, very good. Dodgers taking 2 out of 3 over the Texas Rangers. Yamamoto is the Cy Young front runner, baby.
He with him plus Hunter Green getting shelled by the Orioles on Saturday kind of nudged him ahead, I would say.
However,
Paul Skeens giving a home run to Kyle Manzardo. Yeah.
I know pitcher war is stupid. Do you know who's leading the National League in pitcher war? Yamamoto is second.
And it's not Hunter Green anymore because of his bad start.
Correct.
It's not Paul Skeens. It is, who is it?
Jesus Luzardo, who has been sensational. Oh, yes. For the
yes.
Phillies.
Yeah. After yesterday. Yes, he was. Phillies could not hang on to that one, sadly. Dodgers Rangers. This was a very interesting series. So Yamamoto's awesome on Friday. He shuts him out. We have Roky Sasaki on Saturday against Nathan Eovaldi. And this was a very strange Roky outing. His fastball was like 92, 93 for the first few innings. And he like wasn't throwing it. And it was like, okay, is this Will Smith basically saying, your fastball sucks right now. Like, we're going all sliders and splitters. Or was this a conscious game plan coming into the game where he's just going to be throwing more sliders and splitters anyway? By the end of the game, he was up closer to 95, 96. Sasaki said afterwards that I wasn't injured. Like, my mechanics were off, whatever. He only allowed two hits. He completed six innings. He still walked a few guys. It wasn't pretty. There were like, he had another home run that got robbed. Andy Pies robbed a homer in the first inning. But he got through six innings. So, yeah, again, this Rangers offense is like kind of terrible right now. So it's hard to get too excited there. But hey, he's any pitcher that can give you six innings right now, especially for the Dodgers, like that's fine. That's good. I'm not going to hate on it too much. Ultimately, the Rangers end up winning on an Adolis Garcia walk-off home run off of his former teammate Kirby Yates. So that was a pretty brutal loss for the Dodgers on that day after that Roky start. But yeah, I wrote about Roky last week. I still don't really know what to make of him. Every game gives you like some reason to be encouraged and then another reason to be super concerned. And that's just kind of where we're at with him.
I think it's fascinating because they're treating big league games like minor league games. It feels like you see this a lot in the minors where, okay, so like a very random example, the White Sox have a pitcher, a prospect now named Noah Schultz, and Noah Schultz has like one of the best sliders you've ever seen. And the rest of his stuff is just like, right now is pretty, it's pretty good. It's good. And so there have been games where the White Sox are like, you are not allowed to throw a slider today. Mm-hmm. Not allowed.
Figure it out.
Figure it out. Learn how to do this other stuff. Right?
Yep.
I'm not saying they're doing it that overtly with Sasaki at the big league level, but they're not doing that. Right? It's this idea of, but I think they're doing it more with the velocity where it's like, we don't necessarily, he doesn't need to be throwing 98. I'd rather have him be peppering 94, 95 on the corners and sustaining that command. Like in the beginning of the season, it felt like he was just selling out for velocity. Sure, and that's not necessarily the best way for him to develop right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear that, but like, no part of the plan is him throwing 92 at any point. So maybe he starts throwing more sliders and splitters in general. That wouldn't surprise me if he just pitches backwards more often because the fastball command and how it's playing is just not, he's just not getting any fastball whiffs whatsoever. Part of that is command. Part of that is just how the pitch plays. But if it's a 93, yeah, there's just no way. He's just going to keep going sliders. But it was definitely the best the slider has looked, I would say, which that alone is a pretty encouraging step forward. But either way, the Rangers win that one. And then on Sunday, we have Tyler Mahle against Tyler Glasnow, and this is just a total pitcher's duel. Tyler Mahle has been amazing. I don't know where he ranks in pitcher war. I have to imagine he's in the top 10. Number one. Okay. He has been tremendous. DeGrom, both of these guys got TJ around the same time. Of course, we're focused on DeGrom. No one cares about Tyler Mahle. Tyler Mahle did not look good. He was hurt. He had an injury scare in spring where it was like, okay, well, this guy's just going to be a non-factor. He has been unbelievable. And there was a time when he was a really, really good starting pitcher in the big leagues. Like, there was a little couple-year stretch there where that was true. So it's not that hard to believe, but he's been amazing. Glasnow leaves early with leg cramps, even though it was kind of the best he's really looked so far this season. But again, this Rangers offense right now is not good. And then they win the game on a very strange play at the very, very, very end where Wyatt Langford tries to steal a base as the tying run and he pops off the bag briefly. And they, on the review, it looks like he probably was still safe, but they call him out because that's how we do replay nowadays. It was very unfortunate and sucks for him. But also, the Rangers can't score and that's on them.
Ohtani, baby. Ohtani, baby.
Ohtani, baby.
Ohtani, baby.
Ohtani, baby has arrived.
Not a secret like the wife. No secret wife.
Can I just say
a normal Japanese baby?
Baby girl. I don't believe we know the name, which is fine. It's his private personal
life. I told you what it was
going to
be.
But I think it...
Didn't I predict
this? Oh, you did. I don't know if we have a stat. I don't know if we have a status on whether you're correct about that.
Mike Trout. If the baby's named like... If the baby's named like Miko or Michaela, do I get a W for that?
Sure, you do. Okay. Here's the thing about this. He managed to go on the paternity list and then come back and play again in the time since we last recorded. Like, we didn't even know when we recorded last week, we didn't even know he was going on the paternity list. And then he went, missed two games, was back in the lineup on Sunday because Otani loves
Ready?
Ball.
I think this is one of my biggest problems with modern baseball right now.
Yeah.
I think that the paternity list should be a 2-week thing. I think there should be a mandatory amount of time that you have to
minimum.
Miss.
It's like the IL, where it's like you can't come back in less than 10 days.
Go spend time with your child. It doesn't matter. It's two games in April. Now, I'm not saying like Otani doesn't like his kid. That's not the take here. What I'm saying is there is a cultural pressure that exists for these guys to get back ASAP, and that's because they don't have more time on the back end. Like, if they want it, I think players should have the option to spend more time on the paternity list if they want. Can you imagine, Jordan, having a kid and then 3 days after you have the kid, you're just not in the same city as the kid anymore? And like, you're like,
you know, less than that. It's like 2 days.
That's what I'm saying. It's like incomprehensible to me. And like, I feel bad. Like, again, I would. These guys have good lives. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that the miniature paternity list time compared to, I mean, let alone European society, right? It's like,
well, this we want to open up this conversation about. That's a whole other thing. But yeah, well, like, there's a lot of things we can't. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, but just add it to the list of I cannot fathom that part of being a Major League Baseball
player. Dog, especially if you're a starter. If you're a starting pitcher, just say to the team, I'm missing one start. You're going to spot start it. That's 11 days or whatever.
Sure.
Catch you later. Anyway, good for Otani.
I'll throw outside in the hospital parking lot.
Sure.
Don't worry, I'll stay loose. One other thing we have to mention from this is that our friend Brent Honeywell got his World Series ring.
Thank God.
Brent is still a free agent. He lives in Dallas. And he went to see his old friends, and the Dodgers posted a bunch of videos and pictures of it, and it made me very happy and very sad at the same time, because I wish Brent had a team. But him getting that and getting to... it's just so freaking cool. So no further notes on that. I'm just happy for him, because obviously we care about him very much. Jock Peterson is over 38.
Bad.
Jock Peterson is over 38, and I don't know where that goes from here.
Jake, probably 0 for 39 is where it goes.
That's probably true. All right, before we do turbo mode and finish all these other ones, we have to slow it down a little bit for a little sorry for your mentions. Oh boy, it's time to open up the at Orioles Twitter feed.
O's lost 24-2 on Sunday. Weird series. Not they knocked Hunter Green around on Saturday, took that win, but Reds take the series. The O's lost 24-2 on Sunday. In the kicker, in the rubber match on Easter Sunday. And part of the quote from Brandon Hyde was like, you never like to have that on an Easter Sunday with, you know, fans coming out.
No, you don't.
You don't like to lose 24-2 any day of the year. Here's the problem with this one is that Charlie Morton, with all due respect, looks horrible. And he has been very open about this. He's been very honest. It's been very interesting to see him kind of wrangle with his own pitching mortality. I feel bad for the man. It's been an amazing career. He has a 10.89 ERA in 5 games started. If the Orioles had any semblance of legitimate pitching depth, they would phantom IL Charlie Morton. They would send him to Sarasota. And they would give him 3 weeks to just figure it the hell out. That's not going to happen because he might be better than the next option. And that just speaks to the Orioles pitching depth. But wait, reinforcements are on the way in the form of Kyle Gibson. I'm sure that'll fix everything. In one fell swoop, just feel so bad for Charlie Morton, but it might be time.
Yeah, like you said. I mean, he's 0-5. They've lost. He's been like, he said after this game, like, I feel like I can figure it out, but how long am I going to negatively impact the team before I figure it out? And that's kind of what we're all wondering. It sucks when he keeps coming back because he keeps feeling like he has something to give. Is the stuff that different than it's been the last couple of years? No, but obviously the strike throwing has been terrible, and that has put him in situations where he is getting absolutely obliterated, and it is an absolute bummer. However, he is not the only Orioles pitcher that is not necessarily showing up, and he is just the most extreme example because they signed him specifically to fix this, whereas Cade Povich is just a young pitcher, you know, trying to figure out the major leagues. Those are two very different situations. Anyway, there's a million things we could say about this 24-2 outrageous box score. Ellie had an amazing game. Austin Wins had six hits. Jorge Mateo and Gary Sanchez had to pitch. But we're just going to combine all of them into the Orioles replies. As the Orioles tweet out, final, Reds 24, Orioles 2. This got 57,000 likes, 2,000 bookmarks, which is interesting. 6,000 retweets, quote tweets, whatever, and over 2,000 replies. So, Jake, why don't you take it away?
Sure.
Sorry to the Orioles social media managers, but this is truly, we have some real gems here in the replies. So, go ahead.
Kyle says, hey, you'll get him next time.
Oh, that's nice. I hope so.
Dick Moonfort
truly might.
Says, damn, saw the score and thought this was the Rockies for a second.
Yeah, that is the worst thing you can say about a baseball team.
Average Aiden says, I took y'all at plus 16.5 in baseball and still lost. I hate you.
I like this one. This is from OMG Mets 2024. Nobody scores 25 on the Baltimore Orioles.
There was the funny thing about this game. So it was 24-1. And Adley Rutschman went deep with a solo shot. Chris Paul trims the lead to 46 with a three.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of people making references being like, surely this is the worst loss in franchise history. Oh, wait.
And a lot of Bengals Ravens stuff that I frankly did not understand.
This is a football game. For those unfamiliar, the Orioles once lost 30-3. So
thanks.
This is not their worst ever loss.
For the rat. Thank you.
And this is a tough one. This is a really, really tough one. And then a lot of people saying to bring back Buck Showalter. I don't think that this loss was on Brandon Hyde. Yeah, I'm going to say this one does not feel like this was a Brandon Hyde.
People are like, I can't believe that they brought in Jorge Mateo to pitch Brandon Hyde. Yeah. It's like, well.
Yeah. I'm also always interested in the replies that are just like, fire everybody. Like, that's how we're going to make the playoffs. It's like, fire and trade everybody. Like, that's our path back to the postseason. It's like, probably not.
That's
probably not the short-term fix. But anyway.
Like, the people failing are worse probably than the people failing from a player perspective, right? It's like, oh, fire Ryan Mountcastle. It's like, well, he's better than Kobe Mayo, probably. Like, what do you want? It's not like it's fire Ryan Mountcastle and like Pete Alonso gets to show up and be first.
Right. Allow me to say one nice thing about the Orioles and then we will go to turbo mode.
Sure.
Cedric Mullins, man.
Banging, dude.
Holy crap. And I just think he's a very interesting character for this team.
Yeah.
As a pending free agent who has been, who is, along with Ryan Mountcastle, the longest tenured member of the organization, drafted, I think, in 2015. I'm very curious whether it means he just plays it out with Orioles and is awesome and is an all-star again, and then he makes a bunch of money this winter somewhere else. That's possible. Whether the Orioles are just actively terrible and like they trade him, I guess, is a possibility too. I guess that's on the table. If he's like, I want to be an Oriole. And they're like, we don't extend people. Sorry. Like, that's also interesting.
Kind of
him being this
already.
Good is, right. Exactly. So that's maybe already happening. So Mullins though, he looks great. And, I mean, we love Cedric Mullins. So happy
Jordan,
for him.
Jordan's amazing. Jordan's like, I want to say one nice thing about the Orioles. That really good player that's playing well for the Orioles. His time is coming to an end, and maybe he won't be on the Orioles anymore. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. No, you're good.
I don't want
you're good.
That to
just
be true.
No, you're good. Just shut up. Okay, just
I don't
shut
want
up.
That to be true. He's slugging .627.
Hey,
Cedric
banks.
Mullins. Holy crap!
All right,
Let's do it. Let's fly through the rest. All right, we have 9 series left and we're already over an hour, which means it's time to throw it into turbo mode. Jake, start us off with the Cubs and D-backs.
Cubs taking 2 out of 3, all-time bizarro world upside down game on Friday in which the Cubs blew a 7-1 lead in the blink of an eye and then won. This is a text from my friend Beef, who is a big Cubs fan. This is after they won. That's the real downside of a Friday matinee at Wrigley. The only ball game on, so all fans that want to watch can tune in and see the embarrassing Cubs bullpen absolutely crap the bed. They're going to have to score 10 runs every game to have a shot. It's a long season. I don't think I can get too wrapped up in one game, but holy crap, give me a break.
Good news. They might score 10 runs a game. Astros take 2 of 3 over the Padres. Cam Smith hits 2 homers on Friday. Hayden Wesneski was good again. Tatis hits 2 more homers over the weekend, including on Sunday, as the Padres take the game on Sunday Night Baseball. Luis Arraez, scary collision at first base. Thankfully, it seems like he's okay. Jake, should we have a double bag at first?
Yes, we should. We need a grocery checkout person to sit down with Rob Manfred and say, would you like me to double bag this? And Rob can say yes. We'll talk more about the double bag later in the week. Tigers almost mopping the Royals, dropping the one on Sunday. We might have talked more about them, but when you have a chance to mop and Tarek Skubal on the mound, that's a game we got to win, friends.
Yeah, Royals only have 11 home runs in 23 games. That is last in Major League Baseball. The Seattle Mariners take 2 of 3 over the Toronto Blue Jays in Toronto. 4 straight series win for the Mariners. Rowdy Tellez in extra innings on Saturday hit into a heartbreaking, devastating double play to end the inning, and then a massive grand slam a couple innings later. The Blue Jays also are struggling to hit home runs. The Blue Jays have 12 home runs. Cal Raleigh has 9 home runs. That is all you need to know about that series. The Brewers took 2 out of 3 over the A's. Did something cool happen in the series, Jake Mintz?
Yeah, Caleb Durbin, Major League debut, pride of the Bears, 2 knocks in that first game. And the Brew Crew stole a franchise record 9 stolen bases on Sunday, which is amazing. 9 stolen bases is great. When you steal 9 stolen bases, it's someone else is doing something wrong.
Right. Which, like, is weird because I don't know why, because Jeffrey Springs is a lefty and Langeliers is good at controlling the running game. I don't know what happened there. Logan Henderson was fantastic in his debut. He could help the Brewers. Rotation. Angels 2 out of 3 over the Giants. Okay, Angels, we see you. Mike Trout hits 2 homers on Saturday. Zach Neto is back. He homered as well. Justin Verlander actually looked pretty good finally. Among those 1-year $15 million pitchers, he looks the best, and he doesn't look very good. So that speaks to how those guys are doing. But then Ryan Walker, my Team USA reliever, just, he melted down under the pressure of me putting him on Team USA. Joe Adell, walk-off double, caps a 4-run 9th inning.
Philadelphia Phillies taking 2 out of 3 from the Marlins without really trying. Phillies are on pace for a 90-win season, and it does not feel like it at all. No. They're in a bizarre place. The pitching has been very good, the starting pitching. Jordan Romano, Phantom IL, that guy, like right now, just...
Yeah.
Speaking of Phantom IL Phillies, Brandon Marsh, who was 0 for April, hits the quote-unquote injured list with a hamstring issue. They're going to send him to AAA on the way back up so he can get some at-bats. It is the first roster move the Phillies have made this year.
Oh, interesting. But yeah, that was just one of the worst series victories we've ever seen. The Fightin' Fish keep on fighting. The Nationals take 2 out of 3 over the Rockies. Snowed out on Friday, which meant that they had a doubleheader on Sunday. The 12-11 game on Saturday was an absolute abomination for everybody involved. Kyle Finnegan, though, continues to do his job. He is perfect. 8 for 8 in save opportunities. And did you see this, Jake Mintz?
Yes.
This is one of the weirder things I have ever seen. This put this up there with Chris Davis hitting 247 however many years in a row. Kyle Finnegan now, for his career, has pitched 300 innings in 300 games with 300 strikeouts exactly. That is some spooky stuff. The Rockies have lost all 7 series this year. One final series, the White Sox and the Red Sox. Well, the Sox versus
Whoa. Kyle Finnegan moves into 2nd all-time on the Nats all-time saves list, passing Drew Storen, with his 96th career save. That's wild, dude. Drew Storen in the rear view.
That's pretty good. Shout out Drew Storen. Shame on you for slowing me down for that fun fact. The 300 was good enough. Final series, White Sox, Red Sox. This is a four-game series because they're playing again right now as we speak, or at least they're about to play for their normal 11 a.m. Patriots Day Marathon Monday game. Red Sox take the first two. White Sox win on Sunday as the Red Sox bullpen does not look very good. Why the Red Sox are struggling to beat the White Sox, I don't know, but that is their problem to solve, and we will see if the Red Sox can take the series on Monday, but they won't be mopping. It could have been a mopping Monday, not just the Marathon Monday, but no, they couldn't get it done. Those were the series over the weekend. That was a lot of baseball. That was fun.
For sure, for sure, for sure. I'm only 96 saves behind.
That's it. We did it. Thank you to Colin Brennan and TJ Brassel for producing this episode of Baseball Barbacast. We will be back on Wednesday. I will be seeing the Guardians take on the Yankees over the next couple of days. Looking forward to seeing that. But until Wednesday, thank you all for listening. BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com is the email. Keep sending those emails and we appreciate it. Jake Mintz, final words.
Baseball.
That's right.